Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. Host Green Diva Meg and co-host Green Diva Mizar share resources and ideas as they explore fun and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. And now, your host, Green Diva Meg.
Hello, welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And I'm Green Diva Mizar.
I'm Green Diva Gina. Hey, everybody.
She's so nice.
Isn't she nice?
She's the only one who says, hi, everybody.
we all have our signature.
I know. We were giving a crap about that last week.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
So we have a great show today. We had the opportunity to be in the studio with Surfrider folks, the John Weber and Christina Bell, who are in this region. And, you know, because we wanted to mark sort of the anniversary, I think is coming up this week, of
Sandy. On Halloween. Over Halloween, I think it was like October 30th, whatever. I just remember I was home and I just kept hearing trees crash in my backyard.
Oh, and my cars, yeah.
Oh, my word. So, yeah, they, I think the most interesting thing that they told us is that they are not really a recovery.
Yeah, they're not a relief organization.
They want to create the awareness beforehand.
Well, yeah. I mean, don't they have some kind of Rethink the Shore campaign, which is not about just restoring and going back to what there was, because what there was obviously wasn't entirely
It didn't work.
Helpful.
Flat beaches, no dunes, lots of destruction, and there are places down the shore. I was just down at Ortley Beach.
Yep.
And you too on Long Beach Island that still is complete devastation.
So we thought that it being sort of the year anniversary, we wanted to see what's going on and what we can do, because it appears that some of this stuff might become more of an annual event, these kinds of storms. I hope not.
I hope not. I agree.
But it's taken us a year to begin to recover, and I know there's been a lot of progress, but I think I like what they have to say in terms of rethinking. So they're all about restoring, protecting our beaches and our shorelines, and that has to do with the environment as well.
Right, and thinking ahead so that if we do have these kinds of storms and like beach replenishment projects, I thought, oh gosh, what's he going to say about that? And then he just said...
He said the right thing.
He did. Yeah. So stay tuned for that, folks. All good. Yeah, he did. Said the right thing.
So then, let's see. I want to mention buygreen.com.
Of course.
Our awesome sponsor.
Hi, Doug.
Hey, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
Gina's still waiting for her underpants.
See, Buy
that sounds really weird.
I feel like get me in trouble with my mom.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Gina's mom.
Anyway, he's going to send us a few things we're going to be featuring in our holiday gift guide, including apparently some underpants, we hope, for Gina.
Well, Gina was like all pumped to do a videotape. These bamboo undies.
Bamboo undies.
Panties. Why not?
Panties. Yeah, well, if I had your body, I would do it too.
Oh, thanks.
There you go. So Doug is going to do that for us, and we love Doug for that reason.
So later today, also on the show, our foodie file is going to be all about soup.
Yes.
Hearty.
You can't get enough of fall soup this time of year, just having a warm bowl.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so cold out. You get home, you just don't really want to have anything that's cool, or you don't want to, you know...
Comfort food.
I had a bowl of my borscht, my leftover borscht today for lunch, and it was very comforting, as it were.
Yes.
And then we got a DIY segment coming up, right? You want to do your little rant about shells?
Well, it's not even a rant. It's just that I'm going to do something with shells in keeping with the theme for today as far as oceans and marine life like that. But I have to say, I mean, I don't want to be a party pooper, but I don't like... decorating with shells. I mean, I just don't like seeing shells in the house. I mean, if you have a beach house or a shore cottage or whatever, that maybe is okay if you bring one home and then put it there. But
way inland here, it's just so weird.
I think shells belong on the shore, on the beach, and I don't know. That's just me. But I did find some nifty little things that I'm going to make, and I've done stuff with shells before.
Right.
So I'm going to just sort of rehash that.
Okay.
And do just a quick post.
But, I think it'll be great.
You know, again, it's just my opinion, but I guess.
That's why it's your segment.
Well, that's my caveat. There you go. It's like what am I trying to say? A preamble. How's that?
A pre-ramble.
A pre-ramble.
Yes. I love that. A pre-ramble.
A pre-ramble.
Yeah.
So also I want to mention, because Halloween's coming up.
Yeah.
Spooky.
Yeah.
We had a great show. And we were kind of contemplating, like, should we talk about more Halloween? We were like, no. You know, we had a really good Halloween show. And the stuff is still, you know, relevant because you have time to prepare. We are so in sync.
Yeah, I know we are. It's amazing.
But we were talking about how fun it was to make the little...
banana zombies.
Banana zombies.
They started out as banana ghosts.
They were kind of, but then they kind of, they turned into zombies.
I made them into zombies.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like you upset them because there were like these innocent little, you
bananas,
know.
Bananas, that's all.
Friendly ghost bananas. And then they turned into like very angry zombies.
Yes, but we got the last laugh, didn't we?
We did. We did.
Because we ate them.
We were their personal horror show. Yes. Yeah. Hello, bye-bye zombie. Well, see, the Green Divas, they should learn. The Green Divas always win, especially when it comes to food.
There you go.
It's true.
Did you hear my
true.
It was a very Halloween-y thing, but we were talking also about decorating, and there's still time, but I was thinking that if folks go out and hopefully to live a more sustainable life, why start buying plastic decorations? Reuse what you have in your house.
Oh.
Hang sheets, old sheets from the trees, and Gina's like cringing over here.
Yeah, because she knows that we're about to go into, I'm about to go into a holiday Christmas decoration rant.
Yes.
Those
pre-ramble.
The pre-rambles.
Holiday pre-ramble.
I mean, if we're going to continue with this holiday pre-ramble, I want to start one based on the fact of those stupid plastic blow-up things that they're, first of all, they're plastic, right?
Yeah.
And they're sitting on somebody's lawn.
Right.
And they take up all that energy to blow them up.
Correct.
It's the most pointless thing. They're noisy.
Yes.
They're just like... All around, they're just not a good idea.
They're not a good idea. It's exactly right.
While we're off on our holiday pre-ramble, why do these things come in packs? Like, it's not like someone just has a blow-up Santa Claus on their lawn. They have Santa Claus, six reindeer, maybe a
snow globe.
Or a little Jesus
penguin,
or something.
A penguin in a snow globe. In a snow globe, whatever. Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story. A couple years ago, we were looking for homes, and it was around the holidays. And we passed, my daughter was in the back, and she was, 20 years old, 21. And
bored out of her mind.
Well, no, she was actually enjoying the house hunting. But we're, you know, we're kind of lulling, and we're kind of like at the end of our day, and we're like, and we pass a house, and there's all of these deflated things.
It's very sad.
Well, she looks at it, and she just she breaks the silence by going, "Oh my God, it's a Christmas massacre."
But that's what it looks like. It's just
horrendous. I agree, 100%. So I'm going to go out and get some old sheets and just hang them from the trees. It'll be like...
Well, and here's another thing. Can I just say that, like, when I was a kid, it was a pumpkin on... You know, you made a jack-o'-lantern and you put a pumpkin outside. That was it. There were no orange lights hanging and there weren't scary ghosts everywhere. Maybe once in a while I made a scarecrow. Maybe.
Yeah.
But, like, really?
It's
just over the top.
Oh, God, that's twice.
You too.
I'm a little scared now.
We're just like Green Divas in stereo.
Yes, or in sync and stereo.
Hey, speaking of stereo, can I just say how exciting it is? This weird segue, right? That we are now on iHeartRadio.
It's a big deal, Megan.
Yeah, it is.
I was talking to someone about that this weekend. Not about that, but they asked me about how's the show going, whatever. And I said... Well, we're now on iHeartRadio. And she went, oh, my gosh, it's a big deal. That's a really big deal.
Yeah.
And you said how your daughter thought you were like the cat's meow.
Well, you know how hard, well, for me, my kids are very tolerant and they try to support what I'm doing. But, you know.
Yeah, okay, Mom. Right. I get that,
so
too.
My 20-year-old is like, usually like, oh, that's nice, Mom. Moving on.
Okay.
And but, you know, when I mentioned iHeartRadio, boy, did her eyes light up. So, wow. That's so cool, Mom.
Yeah, it is. See, we rate.
And the other kids, yeah. So, I mean, of course, Gina's over here smirking because she's the 20-something. You know.
She's the baby Green Diva.
So she must think we're cool, too.
Yeah, you're pretty awesome.
Well, so are you. But, yeah, so we love to thank the folks at iHeartRadio for bringing us on.
And I just want to describe that they have a new talk channel. It's iHeartRadio Talk.
Yes.
And you can download the app, which is so easy to use. And then, of course, you can just go to your... on your desktop or your laptop and use it online. Oh my God, you're so funny, Mizar.
I know.
And all you have to do is go to the iHeartRadio talk, and there's a search there, and put in green. You don't even have to put in Green Diva. Just put in green.
What comes up, Megan?
Green Diva's radio show.
Top. We come up. The greenest of the green. We are the premier green talk-centric show on there.
Yeah, we are.
And Megan said I was funny because we had cut a promo earlier.
Oh,
and Megan kept
60
kind of
takes later.
Yeah, exactly. So I had my part down, which is rare because I often mess it up. And this time Megan was having such a hard time. And
boys.
So I was giving
you'll
her
hear it
cues.
Later in the show.
I was pointing and I was just giving her cues again, just in case.
Well, it worked. It worked.
Just in case.
So you'll hear that later in the show, but we want to thank iHeartRadio and we want to encourage you folks to check it out and check us out so you don't miss an episode.
Ever.
Ever.
Of the Green
Divas
radio show.
No excuses, people.
No excuses.
So, you know, one of the things we're also, in line with, there's so much to talk about when it comes to the ocean and the ocean's health, but the Marine Stewardship Council, you know, they popped up on our radar screen because they've got this new Global Impact Report 2013.
Yeah.
But one of the things I love about them is they've created this Certified Sustainable Seafood label.
Yes.
And so we were chatting about that before, and you guys had some interesting stuff you were chatting about.
Well, so much came up, even because in the news. Well, first, let me just start with the Patagonian houndtooth. That is a very
By the way, I've never heard of.
It's really marketed as Chilean sea bass, and
that's not right.
So overfished that some restaurateurs and chefs took it off the menu for that reason. But now the Marine Stewardship Council oversees these fish farms. However, there is an issue with tilapia. Tilapia is one of the most consumed fish in the United States. There are not the levels. If you think you're getting your omega-3 acids, think again.
Not from tilapia.
Not from tilapia. It's the farm-raised one is chock full of antibiotics. It is fed chicken poop.
Come on.
Yeah, chicken feces is part of the diet. And they're
really,
in such
did you
crowded.
See me, like, kind of gag over here.
Well, it's horrible. Here we think we're eating healthy, but when you think about it, consider the source, which is why I look for wild Alaskan salmon.
Right.
Tell me, wait a minute. When we were talking about it in the pre-record, there was something about bacon.
Yeah.
That makes three. Yes. You might as well be eating bacon, right?
Due to the fact that there's such a low nutrition content for tilapia, because it's been
high fat, apparently.
High fat and all of these awful pesticides and the way that they're raised, it's introduced a lot of other harmful chemicals. They are just as bad as the nitrates in like processed bacon.
No kidding.
I love bacon, but
I love
honestly,
bacon, but why would I be eating tilapia thinking, you know, I just go and have some bacon.
Thinking that you'd be healthy. And then there was that issue, and that's why I brought up the wild Alaskan salmon.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
You pay more because you think you're getting wild salmon. However,
the problem is, you know, you pay a lot of money to get the wild fresh caught, or you go catch it yourself. You know, you're going through the effort and you're really excited about it.
My problem is if I catch it, I can't kill it. And if I have
either.
To kill it, I can't eat it. Terrible.
I would starve in the wild.
I
but
would
go
too.
Ahead.
I would save you guys. I could do it. I could do
you.
It from New Hampshire here.
It was terrible.
But the thing is, you know, you have fish farms, fisheries, and, you know, the fish are really contained. And what happens is sometimes a fish will escape naturally because there might be some holes in the netting or something.
Escape from fish Alcatraz.
Yeah, basically. And all it takes is a few fish to escape. And what happens is they intermingle with the wild fish. And then when, like, the salmon go up the Kenai River to spawn, what happens is, you know, they've bred with these fish and their offspring are completely sterile.
And that's because of the GMOs.
Because mixing a Frankenfish GMO fish with a natural wild caught fish. So it's completely destroying our wild fisheries as well. Or, like, wild fresh caught fish
supply.
But
you know what? Just the eco-balance of everything, these GMOs, they're just evil.
Don't mess with my wild-caught salmon, man.
So
when wild-caught is not wild-caught anymore. I mean, and that's obviously it's a very small percentage, but it's dangerous because they're not reproducing if they've, you know, messed around with their spawning with the whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just
that ain't right.
It's not right.
It's not pretty. So we're going to have the folks from Marine Stewardship Council join us to talk more about this. Apparently, it happens with shrimp farms as well.
Yeah, shrimp's
and
worse,
shrimp
though.
Hatcheries. Oh, shrimp hatcheries.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably, you're right, a second marine ocean show, and we talk about this with the folks from the Stewardship Council. We'll get our happy booker on that. That would be Gina.
And, you know, yes. Also, I just want to mention that we played with the Nissan Leaf, and we're going to have that film out this week, that little video.
Yeah, first we did the Chevy Spark.
Which you nicknamed Sparkle.
The Sparkle.
And the Nissan Leaf, we had some fun. Gina took some video of us.
Yes, I was the film correspondent.
The
I was
camera
the
camera girl.
Yes.
The photojournalist.
That's
what it was. The term right there.
Yes.
All right. Well,
but
listen.
But that's a cool thing because it's made in Tennessee, a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And so you're sustainable that way as well. And I love the solar panel roof.
Well, I think it helps support some of the... you know, the features in the car that aren't
always in. The
creature
comforts.
Well, that aren't always in electric cars because they take a lot of the energy, right? Mm-hmm.
What a brilliant idea.
It's brilliant. Okay, stay tuned. We've got a lot of great stuff coming up.
Greetings, everyone. This is David Avocado Wolf, nutritionist, author, and chocolatier. And you're listening to The Green Divas. Listen close, tune in. And have the best day ever.
Every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas radio show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
Yay! We're here with Paul Miller, our sustainable community guy.
Yeah, who's really about as green as it gets.
Formerly a green dude.
Yeah, you've been a green dude on and off for years, and you're still a green dude. That's why you're here, dude.
You know, you cut Paul, he bleeds green.
I know.
Please don't.
I'm not going to because this is radio. If it were video, however, it could be a different story, my darling. It's a different story.
I've seen her cut people.
So, you slay me.
Literally. We're going to talk to Paul from time to time about different ways that we can get active in our communities, because if there's a way to do it, Paul's done it or he's working on it. So today we're going to talk a little bit about farmers markets, and not just how important they are, how lovely they are, and yada yada, but or what to do with the food, which will be a foodie file segment, but really what it takes to not only start one, which I know you've done, Paul, but how to support it and help it to grow and thrive.
Now, just back up one second. You did this under the guise of your employment in Morristown, New Jersey. Tell us what your titles are and how you make these things happen.
Sure. Well, as Megan said, this has been a part of my kind of lifestyle and approach to community planning and development that is just very logical to me. You know, we've got one planet, and if we're lucky, we get 100 years on it, and we need to leave it in as good or better shape as possible.
We forgot that along the way, though, didn't we?
Some people do, so the rest of us have to make up for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I serve as the coordinator for the Office of Sustainability in the town of Morristown. Mayor Doherty is a visionary that created this office upon being elected 4 years ago, and we're one of the few communities in the state, probably around the country, that have a full-time position in that regard.
And it's a small city.
It's you know, 3 square miles, 20,000 people, but we have a large commuting workforce that changes the dynamic. We've got a destination performing arts center, which brings thousands of people to town, hundreds of restaurants. And
so tell us what it was like to start. I know you were involved in starting the farmers market, which is thriving there. It's one of the best farmers markets around.
It is. We've been very fortunate. You know, we were very strategic in where we located it, on what day we scheduled it, and all of those things come into play for folks that are out there in communities longing to have, you know, this type of asset for
finding
themselves.
Finding the location.
Yeah, finding the right location, doing an assessment of other markets in the area and what days they are and who the farmer vendors are and what types of products they have.
I've got to think that that's one of the toughest things, is to find the right farmer vendors.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's been some challenges. There's been so much demand for local food for all the right reasons, from quality to taste to, you know, lowering carbon impact to supporting local economies and creating you know, viable livelihoods for family-owned farms rather than having to sell out to developers to build, you know, additional.
Oh, boy, in New Jersey, we don't know what that's like,
no,
do we?
No, we are the garden. We are the garden and subdivision state.
No, we are the paved-over garden state is what we are, unfortunately, is how I look at it sometimes.
Yes.
Well, and it, this age-old question comes into play for me with farmers markets, at least the ones more here, like in Boudin and Denville, you know, organic versus local. Because most of our farmers are not organic.
Unfortunately, they're not. And, you know, this has been a challenge for folks like me that, you know, pride ourselves in looking, you know, at every option.
And right. You want to support your local farmers.
It's very important for all the reasons we just spoke of. And yet, organics are vitally important as well. And, you know, I wrestle with folks who say local is the new organic. And it's not, you know, for me. Do I want those artificial fertilizers and pesticides and things in my local watershed? I mean, it's no better
but
closer
I have,
to home.
What I have learned, and you can either tell me whether this is true or not, at least in New Jersey, many of the farmers you talk to are transitioning. They aren't necessarily, they can't afford maybe to be certified organic, but they are trying to work in other natural ways of dealing with pests and fertilizers.
Absolutely. I think as the consumers have become more educated, the more demand there are for lower inputs. And so I think farmers are discovering ways to use integrated pest management and crop rotations and you know, those types of techniques to increase yield and minimize the need for chemical inputs.
Right. Okay, we're going to wrap in a second, but I want to ask you this. When you talked about the location, strategic and everything, and if anybody's thinking about starting a farmer's market, that may be a little daunting.
Right.
Do you have an ABC 123 formula for folks, apart from giving
or
you a call?
Or somewhere that you would recommend
yes,
that they would go.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think one of the better national resources for your listeners would be a group called Local Harvest.
Oh, I love Local Harvest.
So it's a great directory of farmer's markets and communities, and I would expect, you know, between American Farmland Trust is another organization.
Yep.
And then look at your local university cooperative extension programs and maybe just visit a couple farmers market and see if they have affiliations locally. We've got the New Jersey Council of Farmers and Communities under which we organize and operate.
Thank you so
Brilliant.
Much, Paul. This was great. You'll come back for more, right?
Food for thought.
Bye-bye.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. The Green Divas love food. Organic, local, fresh, whole, delicious food. Here now is another Green Diva foodie file.
All right. Gina has another great Green Diva foodie file.
Thanks, guys. Okay, so we're talking a little bit about soups and how awesome they are this time of year. There's really, I mean, winter's great too, but fall is like the season, I feel like, to
it
start
is.
Soup, you
yeah.
know? But anyways, I kind of compiled a list of my four favorites, but there's so many different kinds. I mean, you're not limited to just these four. But the first one I want to talk about is my lentil soup recipe, which is handed down in my family.
Oh,
my
yeah, that's
Greek
a very Greek thing, isn't
it's
it?
It's a very Greek thing.
How long? How many generations?
My great-grandmother?
Mm.
That I know
of. And
she
probably got it from her mother.
Right.
And then, you know, and then so on and so
right.
on. Yeah.
Because it's really inexpensive to make. And
yeah.
the ingredients, everything is seasonal for right now. Because, you know, you're using a lot of, like, carrots and, like, that kind of, like, hearty
yep.
vegetables.
Yep.
But the soup is called fakes. Fakes is like lentil soup.
Well,
careful,
doesn't sound
careful,
right. Careful how you say that.
Yeah, that
yes.
doesn't sound right.
Yeah. I say how to pronounce it, too, under the post.
Okay.
So you can
does.
Say it correctly. And it stores really well, too. So I make a lot of it, just like any other soup. You know, you make a lot of it, and then it keeps really well. But the ingredients, most of them you have right on hand, just a lot of different spices. But the trick is you need a lot of garlic and
yes.
some onions.
Yes.
We can't
and
go wrong.
You can't. And then... I also recommend at the very end having a little dash or just like a
dollop?
A little, yeah, of red wine vinegar.
A spritz.
A spritz.
Yeah, okay. And it's funny because when you said dollop, when we eat lentil soup, we put yogurt on
it.
Yeah,
right. Which I've seen people do as well. Yeah.
And in Italy, the tradition is to have lentil soups on the first day of the year because the lentils look like little coins.
Yes.
So it's supposed to bring prosperity. Good luck. Actually, yes. And good luck.
We do that at our New Year's Eve party. At midnight, we all have.
Oh, that's exactly right. So, at midnight, because you're bringing in the new year.
Well, we just had a coin in a loaf of bread for New Year's, and then we try to whoever gets the piece with the coin in it gets luck all year.
Okay, so we have to do a whole segment just on fun, like foodie traditions for the holidays.
My brother always gets it, and then he hides it. And what happens is he makes me feel like the coin isn't found yet, so I eat all the bread.
Oh my lord!
It's the worst.
Well, not only that, the worst. It's like, okay, but why should one person have luck?
Yeah.
So what other soups do you have going
on? So it's not as wonderful as Mizar's mom's minestrone, but I do have a version of a great autumn minestrone soup. With mine, I talk about, you know, you can put different kale or bok choy in it, which is really great. Very hearty. And it is, you know, it could be a summer soup as well, but you can really make that soup very transient each season, depending on the seasonal foods available.
My mother's trick is this. She puts an immersion blender in, and it becomes very creamy.
Yeah.
And then the key to the success is a couple of tablespoons of pesto.
Yeah,
at the end.
I think that's brilliant.
And olive oil. Plus, we serve it with the bread that's been buttered and fried.
How Italian is that? The whole
so
thing.
Italian.
Oh,
so Italian.
It is so, we called it brain soup when we were kids. And even when my children were children, I said, got to eat your brain soup. It's going to make you smart. It's going to make you smart. You know, thankfully, I have children who've always liked vegetables.
So I want to get that recipe, too. And you also have pumpkin, which is totally wonderfully seasonal.
Yep. So I did a butternut squash, but you can do it with pumpkin, too, which is great, you know, depending on your tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that one I just talked about, you can do like a red pepper in there and then some garlic, sugar. It does call for some heavy cream because, you know, you're doing more of a pureed soup.
I wonder if you could like substitute like a cashew cream with
you
that.
Could you could do cashew cream.
Or yogurt.
You could also do, yogurt. I've seen people.
But like a vegan non-dairy option. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've seen people also do, what is it? It would give it a kind of a different taste,
tofu?
Like a coconut milk.
Oh.
Because coconut milk is a great thickener for pies. It thickens things
right. I absolutely have to go try that now.
Yeah, I agree.
So I would recommend, if you're going to use coconut milk, though, not the whole amount, do like half coconut milk and then half soy milk or half coconut milk and half almond or something.
You might be right.
But I would not do entirely coconut milk because I'd really overpower the taste of the butternut squash.
Because then you'd
pumpkin.
Be looking for the lime.
I also noticed that you had me lime and a coconut. Now, I know where you're going. We don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to say that my beet soup made an appearance.
Your borscht is
like
there.
A footnote there, which I had for lunch today. You saw me.
Yeah.
And then Green Diva Lisa's curried pumpkin mushroom soup recipe is also listed. I found that too.
Yeah,
and then my favorite soup, which you have to go to the post to read more about it, Avgo Lemono, is like a Greek lemon egg soup, and it will cure cold instantly. So check it out.
All right, people, stay tuned for another fun DIY.
Hope you're hungry. For more easy and delicious recipes and even more foodie information, go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. Reduce, recycle, reuse, and if you're feeling creative, repurpose. Repurposing is one of Green Diva Mizar's favorite DIY things to do, and it's fun.
DIY time with Green Diva Mizar.
Well, I'm going to start by again saying that shell decor is not my thing. You know, I don't want to see starfish stuck to your wall.
Yeah.
You know, but I have.
That's a little kitschy.
Yeah, that's a good way to put
it. I think it's okay if you have, either a room or something at a resort, right? You know,
if you're in a beach cottage or a shore house, whatever.
And their accents maybe a little bit. Yeah.
And the whole thing is done in seafoam green and whatever.
Yeah,
that to me is just like, I'm beyond that.
I can see
so
it's not your style.
I don't decorate with anything. So the DIY stuff that I was trying to figure out, I said, well, what would I do with shells? Well, duh, I make jewelry.
Yeah.
And I have used it little tiny, like I like the wampum. You know what the wampum is?
Yes,
the purple stones were used as money for Native Americans.
Yep.
And so I just call it wampum, even though it's not really what it's called. I don't even know what it's called. Shell bits that are purple.
Yeah.
And so I make things out of those. And the small shells sometimes are so beautiful on a tanned décolletage hanging there on a lovely silver chain.
You know, I think the Native Americans used to sew it onto fabric, into the, you know, onto their ceremonial.
Well, shells have been used for time in memoriam forever. They are woven into baskets. They are ceremonial. They are, this is going to sound weird, but they're blown, or they blow through them like.
Got it. Okay.
You know, that kind of a thing.
A mermaid call?
Yeah, that's fine too. Okay. Yeah. So, all right.
When we're straining myself.
So, I tried to find something a little bit. Why?
From, you know, stupid comments.
I like stupid comments, Megan. Especially your stupid comments, Megan.
Sorry.
Anyway.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. So, what I did this time is I made little shell hair clips. Like little bobby pins,
glue them on,
which are but they're a little bit more elaborate than that.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I did some fancy schmancy stuff, and it's pretty, like if you had your hair up at the beach and you wanted to tuck these in there, you know, with a nice tan, and you have that little thing on the silver chain.
Wow,
it's very very sexy. But these are and there's another one that I'd like to reference, and I haven't written the post yet, but it's a lovely shell bottle top on these very light blue bottles that are very, very pretty. And so I think I'll reference that too, because it's an easy DIY. It's not mine, but it's a nice one.
All right.
So
is that it for our DIY segment?
Well, yeah. I didn't get Sally selling seashells by the seashore in there, but, you know, there you go.
Well, look for the post on thegreendivas.com, because Mizar has some fun tutorials for everything she talks about.
I do. I love doing that stuff.
Well, she does. She gets a little camera out and like click, click, click. So you'll see a step by step on how to make these. And, you know, hopefully I'll be modeling one next week.
Yes. And I still owe you a garden wall, don't I?
You don't owe me anything.
No, I'm going to do that garden wall
for
the studio.
She always comes in with something.
I love it.
It makes me feel terrible because I'm not as crafty and making stuff. And she's
just
so
give
busy.
Me some of your borscht.
I like when she brings me squash.
There you go. Oh, let's not go off on the squash.
Can make a good soup.
Yeah, I could.
All right, folks, stay tuned. More coming.
For step-by-step instructions on this DIY project and to find out more about the Green Divas radio show and podcasts, visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
Green Diva Misar.
Yeah, Green Diva Meg.
Isn't technology awesome?
Oh, you betcha. You know, it makes keeping up with the Green Divas radio show easier and easier.
Did you know that we're on iHeartRadio now?
Oh, yeah.
iHeartRadio has a new talk channel, iHeartRadio Talk, and all you have to do is download the app, go to the website, go into the search bar, and search green. And guess what comes up to the top?
Why, the Green Divas radio show.
That way you'll never miss a Green Divas radio show.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people, who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Wipe out! I don't know if they appreciate it though,
I know, but we're having fun, and today we're in the studio with John Weber and Christine Bell, both from Surf Rider, which is a wonderful organization helping. And what would you say the mission? What was your tagline for Surf Rider?
Mission of the Surf Rider Foundation is the protection and enjoyment of the world's oceans, waves, and beaches.
There you go. Exactly. Well said.
So we enjoyed that little opening, and now we'll just put it behind us. I hope it didn't offend anybody with that.
How could you offend anybody with a wipeout?
I don't know. But it founded in Malibu, or established in Malibu, 25 years ago already.
More than that. And yeah, it was founded by a group of surfers in Malibu, California, looking to protect their local break and preserve water quality. And it has grown to a global organization since then. We have chapters in most of the coastal states, the Jersey Shore chapter being a great one here on the East Coast. And maybe Christine could tell you a little bit more about the Jersey Shore chapter.
Well, that's, yeah, great.
The Jersey Shore chapter has been around for a little bit over 20 years now. And we focus a lot on water quality issues, beach access, things like that.
And the things that we really need at the Jersey Shore in particular.
Yeah. Tell us, John, what your title is, and then Christine, what your title is, and then we're going to talk about what's going on at the Jersey Shore, but even globally with climate change and all these storms that are heading toward coastlines, and really what surf riders take is on that.
And what can we do about
exactly.
it? So, yeah, start with...
I'm the Mid-Atlantic Regional Manager. My job is to help our chapters from Eastern Long Island, from Montauk, essentially, to Virginia Beach.
Wow, and you're a busy guy.
I am a busy guy, and our chapters are made up of all volunteers. So Christine is a volunteer, so my job is to help them get their stuff done.
Excellent. Christine?
And I'm the co-chair of the Jersey Shore chapter.
So, yeah, you're I think you said earlier that that's the biggest chapter in this region, right?
It is one of the biggest chapters on the East Coast, and Christine's being really modest because she was a great volunteer when she was in high school running water quality tests for us and got to know the chapter then, and then came back after college. And
after her master's degree as well.
And after, you know, kind of worked with us through that, and then is now the co-chair of the chapter. So she's been with us for a long time.
Well, I love the passion, and boy, don't we need it. The news about what's going on in our oceans, when you talk about a floating island of plastic the size of Texas.
Many floating islands
and more of
plastic.
The gyres or whatever, you know, icky. So, one of the reasons we wanted to have you in now is because this is around the first anniversary of Sandy, which was a devastating storm to us in New Jersey in particular, and New York, of course, and Connecticut. And it had an effect on our shorelines. And I guess I want to hear from you guys what's gone on over the last year. What was really ultimately the effect? Where are we a year later? And what can we do about it if this stuff is going to start continuing? Thank you, global warming.
I'll start out. I just want to say right after Sandy, I mean, of course, most of Surfriders volunteers, we're coastal dwellers. We live there. So we had a lot of people that were affected themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, Surfrider Foundation is not a relief organization, but we were in that area. And your average Surfrider Foundation member is sort of an able-bodied, youngish person. So as soon as we were able to, our volunteers were out there in force, swinging hammers, removing debris, doing that to the tune of having about 600 people go out in volunteer weekends in November and December last year. And that was probably a really conservative estimate. So we were out there doing all that work that needed to be done. It wasn't exactly our mission statement, but that's just what we did.
Right.
And we were out there every weekend, and we were some of the first volunteers in places like Ortley Beach. And us being our presence kind of inspired other people to be there during the weekdays and really got a lot of things off the ground.
I will say you're not a relief organization, but I just spent a weekend in Ortley Beach, 10 days. We had a crew of volunteers. That community needs a lot of help still. I was amazed by the devastation that is still there. And I know that's not your responsibility, but I just need to point that out, that people still need help.
So tell me what you do see Surfrider's role in some of the shoreline devastation that's coming around, presumably by, climate change. And it does seem like there's more and more going on. And, of course, there's more human habitation closer to the shore, and that's obviously having an effect. What do you see Surfrider's role?
Well, I think Surfrider, in a way, we're sort of not doing anything different than we did before Sandy, but Sandy was certainly a catalyst for let's really get on top of this stuff and rethink a lot of these things. So the way we develop the shore is certainly paramount, and we would like to see a shoreline develop that maybe can withstand storms like this in the future and developed in a sustainable way. Much easier said than done, especially in a place like New Jersey, but at least that's the goal. That's what we're after. And a couple of other things, a huge response to Sandy is especially beach replenishment, this idea of dredging sand off the ocean floor.
That was my next question.
Putting tons of it on the beach. And it's problematic. It was problematic before Sandy
for a
lot of reasons. Just the short ones are it gives rise to more coastal development in these vulnerable areas that possibly should not be so developed.
Correct.
It sometimes can make swimming and other recreation, it can impact recreation, even make it less safe, more dangerous for swimming conditions.
Really? What, from like riptides or something? Does it make it easier to...
It changes the ebb and flow. And so, yeah.
At a normal, non-replenished, natural beach, there's kind of a gradual slope into the water, and right. there's offshore sandbars, things that break the waves, have them break further out. Once a beach has been replenished, it's a very steep slope right off the shore. So there's shore break, which just causes really dangerous swimming conditions. There's an increase in neck and back injuries. People who aren't good swimmers step out thinking the water will be a foot or two deep, and it could drop off to be 15, 20 feet deep.
Yikes. I think that's happened to me. I mean, I don't go to the Jersey Shore often, but you know the beaches where, boom, and you go right down. Then the waves break harder and bigger. And I'm very much against beach replenishment because, you know, the earth has taken care of itself for such a long time. Why do our egos get in the way and say we can make it better? I have that issue.
Well, because we want to be more comfortable at the shore.
And to continue on about beach replenishment, it's also not sustainable. I mean, the money's not going to be coming from Washington, D.C. forever. And, of course, sea levels are rising, which is sort of the elephant in the room. So we sort of have to rethink this, think of a better strategy. So, again, Surfrider is just pointing out all these things that we've said about beach replenishment before Sandy. Now there's so much more of it as a result of Sandy and as a response to Sandy. And, you know, we're one of the groups saying, we can't be a one-trick pony. It's not just about dumping sand on the beach. We need to do other things. So,
right.
You know, along those lines, the local chapter has started a project they're calling Beachville Watchdogs. And we just want people to go out onto the beach and make sure, sort of document what their beach looks like now before, you know, eight feet of sand gets dumped on it. And it could be as simple as taking pictures, documenting the fact that there's not this really steep drop off or dangerous, you know, whatever, or there's sandbars that are breaking the waves up further offshore, providing that first line of defense, just documenting that, and then maybe approaching local officials and saying, we would like the beach fill that is going to come here, because it's inevitable, it is happening, we would like it to be a little bit of different shape or a different size or a different something other than what's happened in the past.
When you say it's inevitable, I obviously politics and the economy is going to come into play here. There's a lot of things up against keeping our beaches natural. I mean, unfortunately, people have gotten used to having those big old houses on the shore.
Or big
new ones. But I think that somehow the ordinances have changed a little bit since Sandy.
Well, as a result of Sandy, every beach replenishment project that had been done, mostly in the 90s and into the early 2000s, was reauthorized to be redone to the original standards. So in the mid-late 90s, most of Monmouth County's beaches got replenished, and they were just these big wide beaches with no dunes, and that's what we'll be seeing within the next year again.
But dunes are so necessary.
It's true, and this is a huge concern, and one of the things that Surfrider Foundation pointed out, the Army Corps spent $195 million between Sandy Hook and Manasquan Inlet in the late 90s, like Christine said, and they didn't build any dunes. And so they built big, wide, flat beaches that provided essentially no protection. So that's why we saw these towns like Belmar and Monmouth Beach and Seabright just sort of destroyed and flattened. No dunes, but just like Christine said, but Congress just authorized the Army Corps to come back and do exactly what was there before.
Now, here's where I want to know about the political implications, which you've brought up a couple of times, how people can get active with their local communities. But the federal government obviously has an impact. And with the Army Corps of Engineers, what the heck? Anyway, so, I mean, because I there's so many projects that the Army Corps of Engineers has
botched up?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know.
botched up. I was being so diplomatic.
Oh, man.
Because there's other words.
What does Surfrider do? Is there any legislation? Is there anything that you guys are working on a national level or even on a state level to have an impact on some of these decisions?
Well, we do have some of our volunteers as part of our Beachville Watchdog program. We've written a model resolution, and they're working with their towns to get their town to pass that. And the model resolution says we know this beach fill is coming, we know replenishment is going to happen, but we really want the Army Corps to do it better. We want a better design project. We want, you know, a more gradual slope. We want dunes included, things like that. So we've been working with some towns and talking to the Army Corps, hoping, you know, that we'll get a better
it seems
project.
Like education is part of your mission as well. So now, you are continuing to plant dune grass even now. That's something that you are ongoing, doing projects of dune planting.
Yeah, indeed. So in addition to the policy end, like Christine just said, trying to get towns to request something different from the Army Corps. And let me just say that we sort of went to the federal level talking to Army Corps officials or even state officials years ago. It didn't really help us get different kind of beach replenishment projects. So the key is really at the local level.
Okay.
They're sort of the customer, and if they can request it because of local pressure from the state and the Army Corps, I think we have a better chance of getting those different things. But in a spirit of goodwill and showing what we're really all about, you know, in the spring, we had lots of volunteers that weren't gutting houses anymore and said, well, let's maybe plant dune grass. But we didn't really have the grass, and so many towns were sort of still in disarray, in a state of disarray or whatever. We decided in the fall, so we're going to buy grass, the chapter spending their own money buying dune grass and turning out the volunteers. So we have a series of dune grass plantings coming up in Ship Bottom on October 26th, which is this Saturday. We have Saturday, November 9th in Lavalette, and we have Sunday, November 10th in Seaside Park.
We'll post that for sure.
Yeah.
And we also have on November 2nd in Asbury Park, we have a small dune grass planting followed by a paddle out, just, you know, a sandy anniversary memory type.
Nice. So here's what I suggest folks do. Pack a picnic basket, get the dogs, a couple towels because the dogs will get wet, a couple of
are the
tennis
dogs
balls.
Allowed on the beaches?
Well, after the season, yes,
okay,
right?
Good.
So pack a picnic lunch, bring your camera, bring the kids, bring the Boy Scout troops, and then boom, we'll put how we can get in contact, folks can get in contact with you. And then, I just love going to the shore off-season.
So here, I think it's fabulous, and we'll help you guys get the word out. But one of my questions is, do you get any resistance from residents, from local residents, from people who own some of these houses that are on the shore?
I would say from planting dune grass, no. Well, we haven't sort of taken this under in a grand scale yet, but some people that maybe don't understand everything about beach replenishment, and they see us being critical. It's easy just to say, oh, those surfers, they don't want the beach replenishment. It's going to mess up their waves. And there's a lot more to it than that. Usually, once we can get a chance to educate people, they get it. I can understand somebody still being in favor of beach replenishment, but we're pushing other ideas. We're trying to build community around the ideas that we hold. I'll just give you an example. We're launching a website called Rethink the Jersey Shore. You can't go anywhere near at the beach right now without seeing the bumper sticker, hoodie, T-shirt, sweatshirt that says Restore the Shore.
Right.
Which is, warranted and needed, but I think it also embodies some attitudes
going
that like
back to
maybe rebuilding everything the way it was, and we don't necessarily think that's true. So we have launched a website called Rethink the Jersey Shore.
Oh, brilliant.
It actually redirects you to re-think .surfrider.org. In any event, kind of we want to build community for people that want to do things like plant dune grass, go to seminars or get more informed about things like sea level rise and global warming. Also get people involved in chapters, activities like the Beachville Watchdog that we mentioned, and just sort of say, hey, there's a group of people out there that don't think everything needs to be built right away. Let's get them together.
So you help provide information. Let's say I'm a local person in Asbury Park, and I want to protect my beach. I want dunes, and I do not want to, dredge my, ocean floor right there. So you guys provide information so that they are armed if they go to their local council, so they have alternatives. It's not just don't do this refill, but here's what we recommend and what we'd really like to see happen. So you give them all that, you arm them with that kind of information and the alternatives.
Yeah, definitely. And since you bring up Asbury Park, the chapter has a great campaign going on in Asbury Park right now that Christine could probably tell you about, which embodies a lot of this development and beach replenishment and all that stuff. So,
yeah, it's been a campaign that's been going on for about 4 years now. And we call it Keep North Beach a Beach. But at the north end of Asbury Park, there's a gravel parking lot and a beach that's used by, it's the Dog Beach. It's used by a lot of surfers and fishermen. And they've been trying to build luxury condos there for a number of years. And we think Asbury Park has enough luxury condos. And also, It's Green Acres property. It definitely got flooded during the storm. It'll get flooded again, and it's public access that is a really important resource for a lot of people. So we've been working with the town, you know, campaigning really hard there to try to get them to keep that space a park, and hopefully it might become a park.
Well,
someday.
Listen, if I like the, that. I am, and it, and this goes to your point, John. When that whole Restore the Shore campaign was launched and everything, Megan and I and another colleague, Ed, we looked at each other and we went, because it's just going to be fine until the next storm. Let's do it so that we can calculate.
Smarter, yeah.
Do it sustainably. Do mm-hmm. it in a much more calculated way, because we went off on a rant. I'm famous for my rants because of that. So,
well, now, you know, one last question, really, because we have a couple of minutes left, and that is, can you talk about the impact on marine wildlife? Is that a concern for Surf Rider? And you know, the way that we're populating these shorelines and possibly, you know, polluting them. Can you talk at all about that?
I mean, as our mission to protect and enjoy oceans, waves, and beaches, the marine life that lives there is part of that. So it definitely is a concern when we build where, you know, animals used to live, they can't live there anymore. Fishermen are some of our allies for the beach replenishment issues, because when they dump all that sand, that ruins fishing spots. You know, mm-hmm. the fish can't live there anymore. It destroys a lot of habitat and, like, the rocks and things like that. So it definitely is a huge concern.
Has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be, because it's all balanced, and we forget that.
And then there's these unknown quantities. Of course, we have had a massive dolphin die-off all along the East Coast this summer. Is that a result of Sandy? Is that because the contents of, you know, a couple hundred thousand garages, you know, went into the ocean? We don't know, but hopefully we'll find out and get to the bottom of it.
Right, and that's obviously a concern for Surf Rider and anybody who is, you know, interested.
Yeah, I have one last question.
Okay.
Is Surf Rider responsible for all the Uggs that people are wearing now?
Well, no, Surf Rider Foundation is not, but let me just say, I can remember when UGG boots were this fringe thing from Australia.
From Australia.
Yeah. They were only advertised in surfing magazines.
Correct.
And so in the
men
80s.
Wore
like,
them, primarily.
They did.
Yeah.
Surfers wore them. Yeah. You know, I know. It was kind of a lighthearted question for that reason, because I think of UGGs and I think of surfers, and they wear them on the beach during the summertime in California.
Yeah, I know, because as you know, we have family members in San Diego, mm-hmm. and one of them was here earlier today, Brian. Hi, Brian. And he's very familiar with Surf Rider, and he's a surfer boy, and his daughter's a surfer girl, you know. Anyway, I thank you for the work that you're doing and for helping to create greater awareness so that we can all become better educated and better advocates for our beaches and our oceans and the marine wildlife.
So if people want to do two quick things, they can go to jerseyshore.surfrider.org.
Okay.
And all those dune grass plantings I just mentioned, they all have Facebook events if the people want to find them out.
And how else? Just in general, because we have an audience way beyond New Jersey as well. So just in general?
You could become a member of Surf Rider. That's a great way to get involved. You'll be kept up to date on what we're doing locally and nationwide.
So go to surfrider.org, right? All right. Well, I thank you so much for coming out today. And this is important stuff. People, pay attention.
Very good. Thanks, John. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
Well, that was really a great interview. I learned a lot. I think there's a lot more to talk about.
Well, we had talked about doing a second show with the folks from
Surf Rider, or third,
because marine life, ocean.
I know.
There's a lot to talk about.
There's always a lot to talk about because there's always an issue revolving around marine life, you know? There's always something.
Well, yeah. You know what? And it's funny because I grew up watching Jacques Cousteau.
Oh, yeah.
And
Jacques Cousteau
was so ahead of the curve when he was doing his show.
Well, now his kids and grandkids, right?
Please.
Yes.
You're dating me now. And now I'm feeling a little creaky.
Sorry. Well, he was old back then.
Yeah, I guess he was. Although, you know, it was one of those things where it's like one of my childhood heroes was like wasn't the first to pass away, really. When you think about it, oh, I watched that show religiously.
Yeah, I did too.
Religiously. But we look ahead to next week. And Gina, you booked somebody for us next week.
Yes. A good friend of mine from New Hampshire who goes to Dartmouth College. His name is Eric Scarron. And he was the former mechanic for the Big Green Bus that traveled across the country, which is an all biodiesel bus. But right now he has some projects going with all EV cars.
Right. And if you hadn't heard of the Big Green Bus, it was really cool, you know, college students on the road.
9 years going. Yeah. 9 years. Yeah. So.
I saw them when we were doing Farm Aid a few years ago. The Big Green Bus was there. And you could tour the bus, go on the bus, see what it's all about. And
good. So it'll be fun to talk to Eric.
So he'll call in next week and we'll hear from what he or we'll hear about what he's doing at Dartmouth.
All right, then.
Always fun-filled, jam-packed shows here on the Green Divas.
Another green hour gone.
Make it a green one.
Have a great green week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, follow them on Facebook and Twitter, and don't forget to visit the blog at thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. And remember to share the good green news with friends and family.